We begin the Kadav and Sefer Sivam as Daf Mem. We begin on the bottom of Daf Lamed Tesamad Beis, the bottom line where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous Daf. And that is, we had a machlokes that the Gemara had quoted between the Abishol and the Chachamim regarding the preference, priorities that we have regarding a Yavama. The Chacham said that we always prefer Yibim first, and if you don't want to do Yibim, then you do Chalitza. Abishol said that the later generations are not so L'shem Shemayim. They don't do the mitzvah of Yibim for the purpose which is the mitzvah that it was given for. Rather, they do it for ulterior motives like beauty, for marriage, and other different reasons. And therefore, we prefer chalitza first and then yibum. Now, based on that machlekes, the Gemara had two different interpretations in the following brisa that was quoted in the previous daf. It says in the brisa, according to pasuk Yivama Yavei Aleha, that there's a mitzvah of yibum, where the words of the brisa was that originally, before she was married to this Yavam's brother, so she was a regular single woman, that she was permitted to the Yavam. Then she became forbidden to him because she was married to his brother. Then she went back to her original heter, to the permission that he had because there's the mitzvah of Yibum. So the assumption would have been that she's now back to square one because the issa of Eish HaSach is not there anymore. So that the Bible says, Tam Olam Yavam Yavei Lah, that there's a mitzvah. So one interpretation of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi was that the Tana of this Bible is Abishol. And the what he's trying to say in the Braisa is that originally, before she got married to his brother, so then if he wanted, he could have married her for beauty, married her for marriage purposes, whatever reason he would have had, he could have married her for that reason. Then she became forbidden to him, and then she became not forbidden to him anymore. So you would think that maybe she's back to how she originally was, which is that he can marry her for all these different reasons of beauty and for marriage. That's what the Braisa is saying. If you're saying it's Abishol, Yivam Yavaleha, Lim Mitzvah. Then know that your intentions for the Yibum has to be only for the mitzvah purpose. If it's not, it's almost like Abishol's words are, it's carved like that you're having relations with an erva because that's actually your brother's wife. It's only permitted if you're doing it l'shem mitzvah. Rava's interpretation was, no, you could even say it's going like drabbanan. And their interpretation was that before she got married to his brother, if he wanted, he could have married her, and if he wanted, he didn't have to marry her. Then she became forbidden to him because she married his brother. Then she became permitted to him because he died without any children. Now you would think she goes back to the original heter, meaning that if he wants, he could marry her and do yibum, and if he wants, he doesn't have to marry her and he could just do chalitza, meaning it's the same thing, just like as she was when she was single. That's what Tamalem Yivam Yivela comes to teach us, that no, it's not like as she was, that it's even square, it doesn't make a difference if you marry her or not. There is a difference, because the mitzvah is, as the Chacham Shita is, initially we prefer that you do the mitzvah of yibum. If you don't, then you can do chalitza, but the preference is on the mitzvah of yibum. Those were the two interpretations of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi and on Rava in this brisa. Now, on that, the Gemara asks on Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi's interpretation from the beginning of the brisa. As the Gemara says, Eimer Reisha. Let's see the first case that the brisa talks about, which sounds like a similar type of a process. The brisa quotes a pasuk in Vayikra that says, Matzah is teichel b'mokim kadosh, that the leftovers of the flour offering that was sacrificed on the Mizbeach, so the rest are eaten as matzahs, meaning unleavened baked bread, in a holy place. Now, the problem is that this pasuk seems to be superfluous because the beginning of that pasuk says, v'hanayseres min ha-mincha yechelu, that the leftovers of this flour offering is eaten. So why is it repeated again that you should eat it? So that the Braisa says mitzvah is coming to tell us that there's a mitzvah. As the Gemara continues at the top of Mem Amud Aleph, as the Braisa explains, Shebet Chila, that's because in the beginning, before this flour offering was sanctified, before it was Kaidish, you just had some water with flour, you had this flour. So then it was something that wasn't permitted. Now, then Nestor, then it became forbidden, meaning when it was sanctified that it's going to be brought as a carbon mincha. Then, then it gets back permitted again. When the kaimitz, the fistful of the flour, is sacrificed on the Mizbeach, then the rest of it becomes permitted to be consumed. Now, Yochel Tachzal Terarishin, so the Braisa says, you would think it would go back to its original prior hektish status, which now it's just like a regular thing that you're allowed to eat if you want to or not. Tamaloy Mem Matzah Tziochel B'Mokim Kodesh, that's what the Pasuk, which seems superfluous, is coming to teach, that no, the matzah should be eaten in a sanctified place, that it's a mitzvah. It's not just like that you're allowed to, as it was before it was sanctified, that it's going back to what it originally was. No, it's that it's permitted, but more than that, it's actually a mitzvah. So the Gemara explains, Bishlam l'Rava, we can understand according to Rava's interpretation, the Amar Hamani Rabbanhi, that he said, who is the town of this Braisa? It's the Rabbanon, and that the way you should be Geiris is that it's a mitzvah, and not Lim mitzvah, like it would be if you interpret it according to Abishol. So, Hacha Hacha Kama, this is what the Braisa would be saying. matzahs te'ocha b'mokum kodesh, matzahs should be eaten in a holy place. That's a mitzvah. Meaning, shebetchila ha'isalav b'chal heter, originally, it was just permitted flour, just regular flour that you have in the store. Ratza eichla, ratza ein eichla. If you want, you could eat it. If you want, you don't have to eat it. Then, nesra, then it became forbidden because it was sanctified, which no one's allowed to have any hana from something that's hektish, even kohanim, it's me'ila. Then, chazer v'hotcha, then becomes back permitted again, meaning once the fistful of the kaimitz is sacrificed on the mizbeach, then the kohanim could eat the rest. Now, yochel tach l'terishin, you would think it goes back to its original status that it was before it became holy, which is ratza eichla, ratza ein eichla. If you want, you could eat it. If you want, you don't have to eat it. Now, the Gemara interrupts this interpretation of how this would be in the version of Rava to ask, what do you mean? Ratza ein eichla? You would think that that's what it would go back to if you didn't have the pasuk that you don't have to eat it. But v'ksiv, it says the pasuk in Shemais, v'achlu eisam, that you should eat the kachim, asher kupa behem, which will then be atoned with, meaning that there should be a complete atonement through the eating. So on that, the Gemara explains, that teaches that through the eating of the kahanim, that actually provides an atonement for the owner. So how can you say that if we didn't have this extra pasuk, we would have thought, if you want, you could eat it. If you want, you don't have to eat it, like it was before it was sanctified. Can't say that, because that's actually part of the kapara. So the Gemara amends and says, Ella, rather what it's saying is that we would have thought, Ratza, who, if him, meaning the kohen that did the avodah, of this mincha, of this flour offering, if he wants oichle, he can eat it. Ratzan, if he wants, koin acha oichle, another koin could eat it. Tamalayman, that's what the pasuk is teaching, according to the interpretation of Rava, that tamalayman matzahs te'ocha b'makom kadosh, the matzah should be eaten in the holy place. We already said it's eaten, but it's repeating it to tell you that it's a mitzvah. That's how you would understand it, according to Rava, who says the Tana the Brisa is the Rabbanan, that the word mitzvah is not saying that lim mitzvah, that you should, what you're doing should be for mitzvah purpose, as it was according to Abba Shaul, who, regarding what type of beer you're going to be doing it, is it for noi purposes, for beauty, or you're doing it for the mitzvah purpose? No, it means to say, it's just that it's a mitzvah. You're doing it anyway. El Rav Nachum Rav Yitzchak Rav Dimi, but according to him, that he says that the girsa was le-mitzvah, that it should be done for mitzvah purpose. The Amar Abba Shaul, that he says, the Tana, the Brisa, Abba Shaul. So that made sense according to the second case, the Seifa. But hacha over here, my trei gavni ikka, where do you have two distinct cases that the Tana has come to exclude and to say that, oh, you would think it would go back to its original heter, meaning that if you want this, if you want, you could have that, and tama loyma that it's coming to teach you that you can't, as Rashi explains. You can't say that it would go back to its original heter, that meaning as similar to what Abishol had said regarding the halacha of Yibum, which was that if you want, you would think that you could do it, marry her for her beauty, or if you want, you could do it for the mitzvah purposes. And that's the chiddush of the pasuk, according to, if you say it's Abba Shaul, is saying that no, it has to be done for the mitzvah purpose, if not, it's like as if she's an erva. You can't say that same type of interpretation regarding the resha of the brisa, to say that, oh, you would think that if you want, you could eat it for the mitzvah of eating this flour, and if you want, you could eat it not for the mitzvah purpose. And then that, the pasuk is teaching you that you cannot consume it if you're not doing it for the mitzvah purpose, because as Rashi explains, it's not true. As however he wants to eat it, he could consume it. Because there, by the halacha of Yibum, that's different. Because if he's doing a bia not for the mitzvah purpose, as Abishol had said, then you're actually encountering an erva of Eish Asach. But here, what's the big deal? So you're not eating it for the mitzvah purpose, you're still consuming the leftovers of the mincha. Now, but obviously the problem is, you have to say, just like how we explained in the Reisha, where we had two types of bia, and that's what the Chiddush of the Pasuk was saying, if the Brisa was Abishol, according to Yitzchak Rav Dimi, that it was saying, when you're doing the bia, it has to be L'Shem Mitzah, not L'Shem Noyo, L'Shem Ishes. So you have to say the same thing over here, that we're qualifying when you're eating the matzah, not like the way the other interpretation is, if you're saying it's like Drabanan, that, well, whether you're going to do it or not, just like it was before. And if you say it's like Drabanan, according to Abishol, you can't say that. He's saying he makes the division in when you're doing something, you're doing has to be Lim Mitzvah. But that wouldn't make sense over here by matzah, because by eating the leftover of the mincha, because you don't have to eat it for a mitzvah purpose. So according to Rizwa Abdimi, if he's saying it's like Abishol, how do we understand the Reish of the Brisa when it's talking about the matzah of the leftovers of the mincha? Now, so the Gemara entertains as follows. It says, and if you're going to say, you would think, which the pasuk is coming to exclude by saying this extra pasuk of eating it, that it would go back to its original heter. What does it mean, its original heter? That yes, you're doing this maisa. Not like, again, the interpretation of the Rabban who say that if you want to do it or you don't want to do it. Abishal's interpretation, the word limits, was qualifying an action that you're doing. So you're doing this, you're eating it. But you would think it would be like, how could you have originally eaten it before we're sanctified? Which is that Ratzah l'teyav v'noichla, if you want, you could eat it with hunger, with the desire. Ratzah achila gasa oichla, if you want, before sanctified, you could have eaten it in what's called overeating, which that's what the pasuk would be mechadish in repeating and saying that no, it has to be an eating that you're eating with gusto, with an appetite, and not that you're overeating, that you're stuffed and you're still eating. Can't say that. Because achila gasa mishma achila, it's not even included in the pasuk of saying eating, because is overeating considered eating? But Vamer Shlakish, he says, ha'eichel achila gasa b'yom kippurim pater, whoever eats food that's like over more than he can, he's already full and he's eating food that is exempt. And the reason is because it's not considered eating. Now, if that's the case, as Rashi explains, we would have already known achila gasa without this extra pasuk from the pasuk when it says va'ochlo arnavanov, from the beginning of the pasuk. From that already we would have known, because it says they have to eat it. And achila gasa, overeating, is not considered eating. And therefore, that's why when someone eats achila gasa mikipurim, is exempt from miloy sa'una, from the lav, of which is what the isra of eating him kippur comes from, that one has to be in a state of affliction. Now, the problem is that eating achila gasa is not removing the affliction, because it's, as Rashi explains, it's actually afflicting yourself. You're hurting, you're damaging your body, yourself, by overeating. And therefore, that's not even considered eating in the first place. So that wouldn't be able to be an interpretation of a type of eating that you could have done that we're saying that you can't do, because that's not even included in eating. So Ella, rather, the Gemara says that the two types of eating that you would have thought to say that you could have done had we not had extra pasuk was as follows. Ratza matza oichla. You would think that if you want, you could eat it unleavened. Or ratza chametz oichla. Or if you want, you could eat it in a state of leaven, meaning that it's chametz. And then that is what the pasuk is teaching us. Matzah teyachal. That's why it repeats this pasuk to say it has to be matzah na chametz. And that the Gemara asks on that interpretation. Because the Ksivit says the pasuk in Vayikra that says lo yisei ofa chametz. It says that you cannot bake the mincha chametz. Now, then the pasuk says chelkam. Now, actually, that word chalkam is from the next part of the pasuk, which is chalkam nasati oisa, that their portion I have given it. Now, however, v'amr shlokah, shlokah says the reason why the word chalkam was near the words leisiyafa chametz was to teach us the following halacha, that v'afila chalkam, meaning although that's really the part of not making a chametz is really talking about the chametz part that's gone onto, going on to the mizbeach, but Shlakish teaches the reason why he has it near it was to tell us that even their chelik, the shiari mincha, the left, the remnants of the mincha, which is the parts that the kanim eat, even that is telling us that leisiyafa chametz, that cannot be baked chametz, and therefore we already know that halacha from there. So that wouldn't be able to be the reason why the pasuk is repeating it to say that you wouldn't be able to have it chametz because you already know that from somewhere else. So Elirav, the Gemara says the following interpretation and the resolution of Rabbi Yisrael Dimi. What we would have thought had we not had this extra pasuk was Ratza Matzal Oichla. You would have thought that if you want, just like it was before it became Hekdesh, that you could eat it matzah. Ratza Chalet. And if you want, that you would have thought that you could eat it when it's scalded in boiling hot water, that Oichla, that's also a type of how you could eat this remnants, how the Kohen could eat the remnants of this flour offering. That's what Talmud, that's the pasuk teaches when it says matzah is, has to be matzah and not scalded. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, I don't understand. Hai chol techadami, exactly what are the properties of scalded flour? I matzah, if in halacha you consider it as matzah, meaning it's not considered leavened bread, well then ha matzah, well then it's matzah. And how can you then come to exclude rice when it's cholot, meaning scalded, from the words matzah teachal, if it itself is matzah? And v'iloi matzah, and if it's quote not matzah, well then matzah samrachman. The Torah already tells us that it has to be matzah, and that is when it talks about the remnants of a minchas chayv, an obligatory mincha. It says in Sefer Vayikra, v'chlu matzahs, yishir matzahs, and that applies to all menachas. So why would I need the words matzah te'achal to exclude it if we already know it has to be matzah? So I think matzah is loy. No, it's not a question. Loyilam emlucha matzah. The truth is, I'd tell you, as we know, that has to be eaten as matzahs, and actually scalded is considered matzah. But a lahachi tana bekar. But that's exactly why the pasuk repeats itself to say this extra pasuk, la'akiv, to exclude, to withhold, and to say that it has to be specifically this type of matzah, but not matzah that's scalded. So although halachically we view it as matzah, but that's why the pasuk is exactly coming to exclude it. When it's chalat, that then it won't be considered as matzah. And then the Gemara asks, el chalat matzah hi dekamrinan, then this that we characterize, chalat, when it's scalded, as matzah, so then l'may hilchasa, what halachic ramification does that have? If the pasuk itself is coming to say that we're not going to be considering it as matzah. The Gemara says there is a different area of halacha. Laimar sh'odam yoytze b'yidecha vasa b'pesach. That comes to teach you that scalded flour can be used, meaning when you put in boiling hot water, that could be used to fulfill a person's obligation of matzah on Pesach. Meaning, afa p'dechalte me'kara, even if the flour was originally scalded. But kiven the hadr afi betana, but once then, if you bake it in the oven and it doesn't turn into chametz, lechem oyni krinabe, we still call it and classify it as the poor man's bread, which is what has to be on Pesach. And therefore, v'adam yotze b'dei chavas b'pesach, and therefore a person will fulfill his obligation for matzah on Pesach. It's just regarding the halachas of the shiari mincha, which is brought in the base of Mikdash, for that type of matzah, that the pasuk is saying an extra pasuk to exclude, and saying in that case, chalat will not be viewed as matzah. And therefore we have resolved both interpretations, Rava for sure, and even Rabbi Yisrael Avdimi, to say that the Tana of the Braisa is even Rabbi Yishmol, that doesn't say just mitzvah, but even limitzvah. When you're doing the type of eating, it has to be a specific type. Just like by Bia, it has to be limitzvah, not lenoi. Here also, it has to be a specific type of eating. It has to be matzah and not challah. Now the Gemara continues with as different qualifications in the mitzvah of Yibam. If someone does chalitza to his yavam, it's basically a type of a divorce when you don't want to consummate the relationship with his brother's widow that died without any children. So then, harehu ke'echad me'achan lenachla. So the brother that does chalitza, there's many brothers, but one brother does the chalitza. So then he's just like all the other brothers regarding the inheritance, meaning his brother died without any children. Now they inherit him. He's not worse off than any one of his other brothers. He also gets to split his brother's inheritance. Now, however, v'im yesham av, if there's a father is still alive, then the chasim shalav, all the properties go to him and not to the brothers. Now, however, that's if he was chaylitz to the yivimta. But if hakoynis is yivimta, if he consummates the relationship, he does bia and performs yibum with the yivama, well then zachav and the chasim shalachav, then he merits all the properties of his brother. And as Rashi says, even if he divorces her tomorrow, but she became his, and all the properties that was coming from his brother goes to him, and then, even if he divorces her, he holds on to the properties. However, Yudam, he argues. He says, no, benkach u benkach. In either one of these situations that we said, whether there's a chalitza, whether there's a yibum, im yesham av, if there's a father, nechasim shalav, the properties always go to the father. Not just by chalitza, where he's not getting his brother's yakum al shem achiv, but even when he does yibum, still he's not, if the father's not alive, then he gets it, as the pasuk says. But if the father's alive, it always goes to the father, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Gemara goes to explain the Mishnah. The first halacha in the Mishnah was, hachelis li'avimta, the one that does chalitza to the yavama. So then, no one's ending up marrying this woman. And then, therefore, this brother who died without any children has an estate. So his brothers go ahead and split it up. And that the Mishnah said that the one that does chalitza is just like all the other brothers. So that the Gemara asks, pshita, it's pretty obvious. Why should he lose his right in the inheritance because he did chalitza? Why should it be any less? So that the Gemara answers, it's actually not coming to teach us that he didn't lose his rights. Of course, if there's five brothers, they split up his estate in five ways, and because he did chalitza, that's not a reason to lose out. Actually, the Gemara is saying, the Chiddush is coming to tell us that he doesn't get the whole estate. Because I would have thought to say chalitza b'makom yibum kaimo. We know that chalitza is essentially filling the void of yibum, but it's the counterpart of either consummating or removing, and therefore v'nishkol kulei nichsei. So we would have thought actually he takes the whole estate, because on some level it's like he divorced a woman, that as if he was married and divorced her. So therefore, just like if he did yibum, he would have gotten the whole estate. So to chalitza. Kamash Malan, that's actually the Chiddush of the Mishnah, the other way around. To say that he's just like the other brothers, that he gets a share like them, but he doesn't get the whole thing. On that, the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that's what the Mishnah was coming to say, that it was downgrading him, that he doesn't get everything, well then, in place of saying, Harehu ke'echen me'achen, as it says in the Mishnah, to say that he's like one of the brothers, what it should have said was, Eina ela ke'echen me'achen mi'boyle. That he's only like one of the brothers, to say that, but not that he gets the whole thing himself, if that was the main point. So El Rav, the Gemara says that no, like we had assumed before. So we would have thought to say that actually he would have not gotten anything. Because Hoyel Va'af Sada Meyibum, he's the one, he might have been just a trigger, but he's the one that invalidated her from all the brothers. He lost, he created that she can't have the option of Yibim anymore because he did Chalitza Tahar. So Likna says, so we should penalize him and say, you caused her not being able to marry to any of the brothers, so you don't get any of the shir. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. No, if someone had to do either Yibim Chalitza, he did Chalitza. So they're not being married to her, but that doesn't cause him to lose his share in the inheritance of the brother's estate. Now the Mishnah told us that although the brothers share it, but if their father is still alive, then the properties go to the father, not to the brothers. As the Gemara explains, as it says in Mishnah Baba Basra, Av koydim l'chol yetzir reich. The father, if his child dies and he has an estate and he doesn't have any children, he's the first one to inherit his descendants and not the brothers or anyone else. Now the Mishnah told us that was regarding if one of the brothers does chalitza to the Yivam. But if a kohenis is yivimtar b'chulu, but if he goes ahead and consummates the relationship, but does yivimtar, then he gets all the properties of his brother for himself. So that Gemara asks my time, what's the reason for that? So that is a pasuk in Devarim that says, Yakum Hashem Ochav Amrachman. The Torah says that the Yavim will stand up in his brother's name. Vaharekam. And he did that, meaning he took over his name, he's creating his family over from his widow, and therefore he gets his whole property, gets his whole estate. Now, however, Behuda Omer, he actually argued on the Tanakhama. And he says that no, if a father is alive, even if this Yavim is doing Yibim, the properties go to the father, because the son died without any children. We always know the father is the first one to get. Now, Amar Ula, he says, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha Falsh Rabbi Yehuda. The Yavim doesn't get it, the father gets it. V'chein Rabbi Yitzchak ben Avcha, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda. V'Amar Ula, and Ula said, V'yitem et samtzi Yitzchak ben Avcha, my time to be Yehuda, what's the reason Rabbi Yehuda? So because the Chassid, it says in the Pasuk over there, it says, V'hoya ha-bachar, that it will be that the firstborn, which we always say that's a reference to the Yavam, because the firstborn brother is the one that should be doing the Yibam, says Asher Teled, which will then give birth. He has to marry a woman. The Yavam has to be someone that can give birth. Now, the understanding is, we utilize the word Bechar to define the Yavam. Why? To tell you, Kibachar, the Yavam is like a firstborn son. What does that mean? Ma Bechar ein lebechayav, just like a firstborn son, doesn't get anything from his father when his father is still alive. He doesn't inherit at that point. The father gets everything. Af hai nami ein lebechayav. It's coming to teach us this halacha that so too this Yavam also doesn't get anything when his father's still alive. And rather, his father gets all the money. Now, the Gemara asks, if that's the case, if you're comparing the Yavam to a Bechar, so then you should say further. Ima Bechar nitl pishnaim la'achamis sa'av. If just like our firstborn son takes a double portion after the father dies, meaning at the time of the death, he gets a double portion in inheritance, he also should get a double portion after the father died. Meaning, if the father dies after this Yavim had done Yibum, then Rabbi Yehuda should agree that then the Yavim should take a double portion, meaning his portion and the Yavim's portion, and the brother that died without any children's portion. But from our Mishnah, it doesn't sound like that. It just sounds like the father gets it, and it doesn't say that then after when the father dies, that then the Yavim gets that portion. So the Gemara answers, Midi Yakum Hashem Aviv Ksiv? The Pasuk doesn't say that he will take over his father's name. Yakum Hashem Achiv Ksiv. It says they'll take over his brother's name. V'loy Hashem Aviv, not on his father's name. And therefore, since at that time, when his brother died without any children, and then he took over Hashem Achiv, he didn't take because his father was alive. And as we said, the father gets that inheritance because he's like a Bechar, which doesn't get when his father's alive yet. He doesn't inherit him when he's still alive. So then once that's done, he can't take anymore. Because if he would take now after his father would die, then that wouldn't be taking essentially from his brother's properties, because that would be coming from his father's properties and he would be inheriting that. And that he doesn't get because it's only Yakum Hashem Achav he has and not Hashem Av. Then the Gemara asks, if that's the case, then we should qualify the halacha of Yibam based on that. Ema hecha deleka'av, we should say that when there's no father, delishkol nachla, where then the Yavim will be taking the inheritance of his brother, he'll have a yakum Hashem achiv, well then tiskai mitzvah Yibam. Then that's when you fulfill the mitzvah of Yibam. But hecha deikav, where there's a father around, deloy shakol, where the Yavim is not going to be taking the inheritance of his brother, that he's not going to take nachla, like the sky mitzvah yibim, then they shouldn't have to fulfill the mitzvah yibim then, because you're not going to fulfill every part of that pasuk. Now the Gemara answers, mi de yibim benachla tal rachmana? Does the Torah make it interdependent, the mitzvah yibim, with the inheritance of his brother's estate? No, Yivumi Miyami, you have to do Yibum. Ve'ika nachla shkulu. And if there is inheritance, meaning the father's not alive, then you take. Ve'ilai, and if not, meaning if the father's alive, then loishaga, then you don't take. The pasuk is talking about two different mitzvahs, two different halachas. One is the mitzvah of Yibum, and one is taking inheritance. But that's not always. It's only if the father's not alive. If the father's alive, he takes. And even after the father dies, he doesn't take Hashem Aviv. He will only take Hashem Achiv. And therefore, it's not a contradiction to the Etzem mitzvah, which you do even if the father's alive. Now, the Gemara brings an incident relating to this halacha, that Yosef Reb Chanina Kara Kamed Reb Yanai. Reb Chanina Kara, meaning that he's proficient in Chumash, in the Pesukim, he was saying in front of Reb Yanai, but Yosef Kama, he was sitting and he was saying the following halacha. He said, halacha Reb Yehuda, halacha falls like Reb Yehuda, like Ula had said. So Amaleis Reb Yanai told him, Puk, go out, Kri Karoich Levra, go read your Pesukim outside, because in halacha Reb Yehuda, halacha does not follow like Reb Yehuda. And no matter if there's a father or not, the Yavam, he inherits his brother's inheritance if he does Yibam. Similarly, Tani Tani Kamed Rav Nachman. There was someone that was teaching a Bryce in front of Rav Nachman and said, In Alocha Reb Yehuda, Alocha does not follow Reb Yehuda. So Amaleis, Rav Nachman responded to him, Ela Kaman. So who is it like? Rabbanan? You tell me Alocha is like Rabbanan? Well, Pshita, it's pretty obvious. Yachad Rab Alocha Rabim. We know whenever an individual argues with the many, Alocha is like the Rabim. So what are you telling me that Alocha is not like Reb Yehuda? So Amaleis, so this person that was teaching from the Braises asked Rav Nachman, he says, so Ismiye, so should I delete this whole Braisa? Obviously, it's what's called a Mishnah Shein Tzricha. Obviously, you're right, it was an unnecessary Tanoik statement because, of course, the Halacha is like the Rabbim, that it's the Yavam that gets the Nachla. So Amaleis, so Rav Nachman told him, Loi. No, he said, don't delete this Braisa from your collection of Tanoik statements because I'll tell you what happened. At Halacha, you were told the halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda Asniyech. That's what you were taught in your Tanoik statements. Now, that actually would be a necessary Mishnah to say the halacha is like a Yachid, because that was what you were taught. Now, Umukshu Huda Akshilach. Now, you had a problem. You were bothered by this because how could we leave the halacha of the Rabbanan and do like Rabbi Yehuda, who's a Yachid? And therefore, what you did was, when you were taught this, Va'afacht. So you turned it around. And you said the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, rather like the Rabbanan. Now, ulamai da'afacht, this that you turned it around, shapa'afacht. La halacha, you did the right thing by switching it around because halacha is like the Rabban, not like Rabbi Yehuda. But there's no reason of deleting this Mishnah because the Mishnah, which the way it was originally taught, which is halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, was not an unnecessary halacha because that would be necessary if that was actually the case. But you're right, the fact that you turned it around was a necessary correction because halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Gemara continues with the next mission again, continuing on the same theme about someone that's hachilitz liyavimte, someone that does chalitza to his yavama. So before we spoke about the finances part, this mission speaks about the relational part. So if someone does chalitza to his yavama, so who also bekroy veiseha? He becomes forbidden in her relatives as if she was his wife. And all the relatives that's forbidden when someone's married to a woman, he's forbidden to her relatives, are going to be rabbinically forbidden by a woman that he does chalitza to because in a sense it's similar to a grusha. So just like a woman that's married and you divorce her, you're still forbidden to all her relatives. Here also, when this yavam does chalitza to the yavama, it's like as if he's divorcing her. So like just like a regular wife that's divorced, he's forbidden to her relatives. And he has to crave up. And she, like a regular wife, would be to her husband, is forbidden in his relatives. Now, we continue on Tamid Beis, where the Mishnah explains all the different arayas where there would be biblical regarding it when it's a person's regular wife. So the Rabbanan made a gzeira by the chalutza that those same biblical arayas, if she was his full-fledged wife, would apply to a chalutza too, as the Mishnah explains. Hu asar be'ima, he's forbidden in her mother, meaning this chalutza, meaning his sister-in-law, who he never married, but he did chalutza to her, so we view it as if a gerusha. So just like a regular wife, you're forbidden in the mother, so too by the chalutza. And ube'im ima, and her mother's mother, which these are all biblical. Ube'im aviha, and on her father's mother. Ube'bita, and her daughter. Ube'bas bita, and her daughter's daughter. Ube'bas bina, and her son's daughter. Uba'chaisa, and her sister, bizman shehi kayemes, as long as the chalutza is alive, meaning that's going on the case of achaisa, and not on the other rice, because even if she was his full-fledged wife, the sister is only forbidden as long as his wife would still be alive. So the chalutza also, as long as she's alive, then her sister is forbidden. And however, the Mishnah tells us, But the other brothers that didn't do the chalitza, let's say there were 10 brothers and one of the brothers died without any children, so one brother does chalitza, so he's forbidden in all her relatives because it looks like she's his grusha. But the other brothers that didn't do chalitza are permitted in her relatives. Now the Mishnah tells us the other half of the sentence, the other way around. Vihi, and she's also forbidden in his relatives, which are Asura Ba'aviv. She's forbidden to now marry his father because of a daughter-in-law. Meaning, again, although she's not really his daughter-in-law, she was never married to the one that did chalitza. But again, rabbinically, we institute all the halachas that apply to a full-fledged wife as by a chalitza. Uva Avi'aviv. She's also forbidden in his father's father because she's the daughter-in-law of his son. Now, as Rashi explains, although even by a full-fledged wife, she's not forbidden in his father's father only rabbinically, because the halacha of Kalas B'nai, the daughter-in-law of his son, meaning of the grandfather, is only one of the Shniyas Rabban. It's a rabbinic erva. Still, as the Maskan of the Gemara will show, that the Rabbanan made a gzera of the Shniyas even by a chalutza. So therefore she's forbidden in his father's father. Ubibnai, and she's forbidden with the Chalitz's son because of Ashes Av. Again, she's not really his father's wife, but again, we consider it rabbinically at least like that. Uveven benoi, and she's forbidden in his son's son, because again, of she is his father's father's wife, which again is also one of the Shnias, but again, we apply the Shnias Rabbanan even to this rabbinic halacha of chalutza. Biachiv, she's forbidden in his brother because of Ashes Ach, because it's his brother's wife. Uveven achiv, and in his brother's son, because then she is his father's brother's wife. And those are the things that she's forbidden in. Again, similar to what we explained in the beginning of the Mishnah on Amud Aleph, where he's forbidden her relatives and she's forbidden his relatives, but we said that not only is it biblical, but regarding, we said what she's forbidden to him, to his relatives, or even by the Shnias. Now the Mishnah concludes, Mutter Adam Bekrevas Tsaras Chalutzasa. So although we said that a person is forbidden, the chalitz, the Yavam that did chalitz is forbidden in the chalutz's relatives, but he's permitted in the relatives of not the chalutza, but the co-wife of the chalutza. And what we're saying is that although on some level we view possibly a tsara like a chalutza, the co-wife like the chalutza, meaning because this whole base, the house of his brother that he has to divorce doing chalitza, so he picked one of them, so her relatives are forbidden, but the co-wife's relatives, that's not going to be forbidden, that's permitted. However, but the yavam, the one that did chalitza, is forbidden in the co-wife of the relative of his chalitza. Meaning, for example, if Reuven did chalitza to Leah, now Leah's sister Rachel is married to somebody else, and that sister Rachel has a co-wife. They're both married to this other person. Now that other person dies. Now then Reuven becomes forbidden in the co-wife of Rachel, which I won't explain the reason why should he be forbidden in the co-wife of the relative of Chalutza. Now we understand the relative of Chalutza. That's this rabbinic isser of viewing a Chalutza like a grusha, so you're forbidden in that relative. But why would he be forbidden in the co-wife of that relative, and yet he's permitted in the relative of the co-wife of the chalutza? Now, relating to the Mishnah, the Gemara brings the following question, which we already alluded to this in the Mishnah, but the Gemara asks Ibailu that the following question. Gazru shnias b'chalutza oiloi. Did they make a decree of shnias, which shnias is a rabbinic decree regarding arayas, although biblically they're permitted, but the Rabban said that it's forbidden. Did they apply that same halacha of shnias not only to a regular erva, but even to this rabbinic halacha of chalutza? So, for example, let's say his mother's mother's mother or his father's mother's mother, where even if he was married to this woman, she's only forbidden to them rabbinically, as Reb Chiya taught in Parakeitza Nafchav Bezim and Alf, where the fourth generation of his father-in-law and by his mother and of his mother-in-law, that's only a shni, it's a secondary erva. Question is, are these things also forbidden by the chalutza to this relative of the chalitz? So the Gemara explains, do we say be'erva d'iraisa, by a biblical erva? In other words, let's say when someone's married to a woman, where then her mother and her mother's mother, where they're all biblically forbidden to him, So there, Gazu Burabban Shnei, so there, the Rabbanan made a secondary erva. The secondary ervas are there to protect that you don't come to violate the biblical, the primary arise. So they said that not only are you forbidden in her mother and her mother's mother, but we'll even take it a step a generation later, even her mother's mother's mother. So maybe there, because you might come to violate a biblical erva. But by chalutza, where even the erva itself of the chalutza is only rabbinic iser, maybe they're legaz rabban shnius. We're not going to make a rabbinic on the rabbinic. Maybe they didn't make it. Maybe there is no difference. And maybe they didn't differentiate and they apply the halacha of shnius to arise. And since rabbinically we consider this as an erva, so we'll apply even the halacha of shnius to there. Now Rashi does clarify and he says that this cannot be inferred, this question, from the Mishnah, although it seems to say clearly, as we had already alluded to this in the Mishnah, when it says that she's forbidden in his father's father, which that would be only based on the halacha because she's the daughter-in-law of his son, which that itself is a rabbinic erva. That the Gemara later on tries to bring this as a raya and rejects this as a proof, because it says ultimately that it's not necessarily the case. You could say that she's not forbidden because of Kalas Benoi, because of the chaylitz, but rather because of her original husband, the other brother, where that was a full-fledged wife, and therefore that's an erva d'iraisa. That's why his father's father is forbidden of kalas benoi, not because of the chaylitz, but because of his brother, who was her husband, which that is a biblical erva of wife, and therefore the fathers that going up the generations, which would be rabbinic ervas, would be based on her original husband, not on the chaylitz. So therefore, that's the Gemara's question, will we gezer shnius by chalutza or not? So the Gemara attempts many different proofs. Tashema, we learned in our Mishnah as follows. Hu aser be'imo uve'emimo. We said that the chaylitz, the yavam that's doing chalitza to this yavama, is forbidden in her mother and her mother's mother. Now, ve'ilu, em'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im'im' which that would be an Erved D'Rabbanan, a Shnias, and it doesn't say that. It only mentions what he's forbidden in Har in the Shnias D'Rabbanan. So you see clearly that we weren't Geiz Shnias D'Rabbanan by the Halacha of Chalutza. But the Gemara says no. Maybe the reason why we didn't say that case was Mishum the Kabbalah Misna Sefer, because we wanted to amend at the end of that statement regarding who the Chalitz is forbidden to. We finalized that statement by saying, but Vohachin Mutaran, the brothers are permitted in these relatives. Now, V'itani Eim Ima, had we said the case of the mother's mother, the great grandmother, Havamina Ha'achin Mutaran. Now, then I would have thought to say that when we qualified, but the brothers are permitted, we would have thought to say, oh, Dafka Be'im Ima. Only in that case is it that then they're going to be permitted, because we didn't make a Shnia, a secondary erva forbidden, based on the Zika bond that was with the other brothers. Ava Be'im, but by the mother, Ava Be'im Ima, Ube'ima, but by the mother's mother, and by the mother, where they are biblical arayas, if it's a regular full-fledged wife, then loy, maybe I would have thought to say that then even the brothers wouldn't be permitted, because we were geyser arayas, biblical arayas, even based on Zika bond, and that is even after the chalitza, we would say that the brother did their shlichas, and it's as if they all did chalitza, and that's why could be we didn't say the case of the rabbinic erva, even though it would apply by the chaylitz, because then we would have thought to say regarding but the exclusion of that the brothers are not forbidden, we would have thought to say, oh, only in that case they're not forbidden. But by the biblical one, they are forbidden. That's why we didn't say it, to know that when we're saying that the achan amatarin are even by the biblical erva. Then the Gemara says, but if that's the case, v'lisni aim ima, you should have said no. You should have said even the bigger chiddush, that the chaylitz is forbidden even in the rabbinic erva, if that would have been the case, which is the mother's mother's mother. But your problem regarding the brothers being permitted, you should have said, V'lisni ha'achin matarim b'kulan. You should have just said one extra word, which would have clarified the whole question, that the brothers are permitted in all of them, which would have told us, not just by the Erva D'Rabbanan, but even by the Erva D'Araisa. And then the Gemara says, Kasha, it's definitely a difficulty. If we want to say that they weren't Geizah Shnias D'Rabbanan, then why would we not have said that case? And if it's because of the brothers, we could have just used the word b'kulan. But the Gemara continues, Tashima. The Gemara continues trying to find a proof to this question. The Mishnah said that he, Asur B'Aviv Uvaviyav, she's forbidden in his father, meaning after she has chalitza done by this brother-in-law, and in his father's father. Now, Ketani Mia, the Gemara says one thing we see. It says Avi Aviv, his father's father. Now, my la, Mishim Chalitz, Obviously, what it's coming to tell us is, why is she forbidden in his father's father, meaning the chaylitz? Because of the chaylitz. Because of that, what she became a chalutza to him, which is like rabbinically like a grusha, so his father and his father's father is forbidden. To have your law, kalas benoi, which is only a rabbinic erva of his son's daughter-in-law, meaning the father's father. And yet still we see that she's forbidden in the chaylitz's erva dirabanan. So you see that even by chalutza we make the halacha of geizer shnius. Nothing versus loy. Actually not. The reason why she would be forbidden in the chaylitz's grandfather of Avi Aviv is Mishum Misna, because of her original husband, the other brother that she was married to that she just got widowed from. To have your law, Kalas Benoi, where she, that yes, she'll be forbidden in the grandfather based on the rabbinic erva of his son's daughter-in-law. But not because of the chaylitz, but because of her original husband, which was an erva d'oraisa, she was married to him, so she becomes forbidden in his, which is also the chaylitz's, Avi Aviv. So yes, we'll have a raise drabanan, but not because of the chaylitz, but rather because of original husband. Similarly, Tashamad, the Gemara brings a similar raya from the Mishnah that says, Ube ben benai, that she's forbidden in his son's son, his grandson. Now, my love, Mishum Chaylitz, it's saying that she's forbidden in the grandson of the one that's doing chalitzitar. Now, it sounds like why? Because of the chaylitz. Just like you're forbidden in your husband's grandson, so the chaylitz is like on some level the husband, so you're forbidden in his grandson too. To have your law, what would that erva be? That would be because of Ashes Avi Aviv, that she is the wife of his father's father, which is from the secondary arise. And you see that we make regarding chalitza the halacha of shnius. Nothing versus loy. Again, no. Mishum Misna. The reason why she's forbidden to the chalitza's grandson is because of her original husband, where she was his full-fledged wife. And she, because of that relationship, she's forbidden on the son's son of the chaylitz. Why? Because v'havilo eishes achi avi avim. Because she's the wife of this grandson of the chaylitz. She's the wife of his father's father's brother, which that the Gemara assumes now is one of the shnias. That's why. But not because of the rabbinic relationship she has with the chaylitz, but because of the biblical relationship she has with her original husband that just died. Now that the Gemara asked, but Ha'amemer tells us in Parakeitz at Chafal from Abayz that he's machshir be'eshes achi avi aviv. He says there is no secondary erva of the wife of his father's brother. And therefore, it must be that if she is forbidden in the yavam, in the chaylitz's ben benoi, in his grandson, must be because of the chaylitz himself. And that is because of the halacha avi aviv. And therefore you see that we do make a rabbinic erva based on the chaylitz himself. And then the Gemara says, no, it's not a riot. Amemer mukila, Amemer will define this term of ben benoi that the Mishnah says in a whole different way. Bebar bura de saba. It's talking about the ben benoi, the grandchild of the grandfather, meaning the father of the one that died, and his brother, the chaylitz, that's who we're referring to when we say it's his ben benoi, as Rashi explains. The Reisha of the Mishnah said that he asur, that she's forbidden ba'aviv, in his father. Then it says, ubibnoi, in his son. Now, the way we normally interpret it is that we're talking about the chaylitz, and we're forbidden in his father, and then we say in his son and his grandson. Amemer is saying, no, when it says benoi, it's going back on aviv. She's forbidden in his father. Now, regarding the father, she's also forbidden in the son of the father, which is the brother of her husband that just died, and the chaylitz. And the reason why she's forbidden in that brother is because of the lav of lo yivne, because once one of the brothers, which we have a chaylitz over here, did chalitza, so then all the brothers are forbidden because of lo yivne. Moreover, regarding the case we're discussing, when it says that she's forbidden to ben benoi, to his grandson, it doesn't mean of the chaylitz, it's going back on aviv, to the grandson of their father, which makes this man forbidden in this woman because of Ashes Achi Aviv, because she's the wife of his father's brother, because of the husband that died, nothing to do with the chaylitz itself. Because we're not talking about two generations down from the chaylitz, we're actually talking about one generation down from the chaylitz, because it's ben benoi of the grandfather. And that makes this woman forbidden based on her original biblical relationship she had with her husband, because that one generation down, which is her nephew, is going to make her forbidden because she's the wife of his father's brother. Now, the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that's the unique interpretation of the Mishnah, so that it shouldn't be a conclusive proof that we were Goyze Shnias and that it's going on the Chayetz himself, but the problem is, it's redundant, because our Mishnah already said those exact cases that you're giving this unique interpretation to for Benoy and Ben Benoy. Because Hainu Achim, the case that you're calling Benoy, which is the Benoy of the father, is what we say already in the Mishnah, that she's forbidden in his brother. And that what you're calling Ben Benoy is essentially Ben Achiv, is the son of the brother of the Chaylitz, because that's that one generation down. So how could you give that interpretation if those cases are already mentioned? So Gemara says that's not a difficulty, because Tana Achiv, and so to Ben Achiv, Min Ha'av. We first wanted to say a paternal brother of the Chaylitz, and also a paternal Ben Achiv. And we also wanted to say a maternal brother and nephew from that maternally related, meaning that we have a case of when he's the maternal brother or a nephew, a ben achiv, maternally related. Now Rashi does clarify one thing. When we're saying this halacha of maternal brother or maternal nephew, it's not because of the chaylitz himself. Because then again, you would be back to the raya that you would have shnias by the chalutza. Because the most she would be also then would be because of Ashes achi ha'av mina'im. She would be the wife of the father's brother that it's his maternal brother. Now that's actually one of the shnias drabbanan. Rather, as Rashi explains, the reason why should be usher in this maternal nephew or brother would be based on her original husband, which is, yes, a rabbinic, but that would be based on because of the Eved Daraisa that she had with her original husband. Now, Rashi says the case must be talking about that her husband that died and the Chaylitz were brothers, both paternally and maternally, meaning from the same father and mother. But however, both of them had just a maternal brother, which they had with the same mother, but from different fathers. And that's how you could have Achiv and Aim. Again, Achiv, because of, although it's the brother of the Chaylitz, but she's not becoming forbidden to him because of the Chaylitz, because then that relationship of nephew Mina'im would be, again, an Erved Rabbanan based on the Chaylitz, but it's because of the Misna again, that also it's his nephew, and that's why she's forbidden in that Erved Rabbanan. So, however, the Gemara has still not proved it, because we had this unique interpretation of Benoy and Ben Benoy, according to Amemer, that we have to say it's talking about Benoy and Ben Benoy of the father of the Chaylitz. So the Gemara continues trying to bring a raya, Toshima, if we were Goyze Shnias by Chalutza or not. So the Gemara said, the Tanya Reb Chiya taught in the Braisa regarding a Chalutza. He said that these Isser Arais, which our Mishnah was talking about, that a Chalutza has to the Chaylitz, are Arba Medivri Taira. Actually, four of the prohibitions that she has now to the Chaylitz's relatives are actually biblical prohibitions, where if it was one's wife, it would be Dairaisa. V'Arba Medivri Seifim, and four are Rabbinic. They are Av, the father of the Chaylitz, she's actually prohibited biblically. Why? Because of her original husband, the brother that died, where she's the daughter-in-law of the father, not because of the Chaylitz, but because that it's the father of her original husband, which makes her a full-fledged daughter-in-law. Moreover, the second one is Ubenai, the son of the Chaylitz that she's forbidden to now, is actually that it's because of her husband that died, because that was his father's brother, and she's an erva to him because of Ashes Achi, that she's the wife of his father's brother. Achiv, she's forbidden to the brothers of the Chaylitz. That's also because they're the brothers also of her husband that died, and therefore that's forbidden biblically because of the Lava Lo Yivne. And fourth one is Uven Achiv, the son of the brother of the Chaylitz, which is also the brother of the Mess, which makes these nephews also Achi Aviv, the brother of his father. So therefore, they're all Medivri Torah. Essentially, they're all biblically prohibited because of the relationship that they're not just of the Chaylitz, but also of her husband that died, which was a biblical relationship. Now, however, the four Medivri Seifrim are Avi Aviv. She's now forbidden to the grandfather, the father's father of the Chaylitz, because of Kalas Benoy. She's the daughter-in-law of his son. Vavi imoy, and it's the father of his mother because she's kalas bitoy, she's the daughter-in-law of his daughter. Ben benoy, she's forbidden in his son's son, which again the assumption is that's referring to the chaylitz, which would make her the wife of his father's father. And fourth of all, uben bitoy, and she would be forbidden in his daughter's son, which because that would make her Ashes avi imoy, the wife of his mother's father, which all of these are rabbinically forbidden, midirisayfim, they're all rabbinically prohibited that she has now with the chaylitz's relatives. So the Gemara says, Ketani Mia, but one thing we see in one of the cases was avi av. She's forbidden in the chaylitz's father's father. My love, mishum chaylitz. Now, why would she be forbidden in the chaylitz's father's father? Because of the chaylitz himself, that it's his father's father. The havi law kalis benoi, which makes her the daughter-in-law of his son. Which son? The son that did chalitza to her. And therefore you see that although kalis benoi is a shnia, that that applies even to the chalitz. Nothing more says lie. No, because mishum misna. The reason why is because of the one that just died, her original husband. The havi law kalis benoi, that it's also, it's still in that case, his son's daughter-in-law, which is a biblical source. Because of the one that just died, and therefore we'd be geyser in Avi Aviv because of that. So Gemara says Toshima, come in here, a different raya from this Braiser Bechia, that said Avi Imay, she's forbidden in his mother's father. Now, my love, Misham Chaylitz, why would it be forbidden? Because of the Chaylitz. The Havala Kalas Bita, because then she's his daughter's daughter-in-law, which is rabbinic. And you see that we have to buy a chalitza. I think Gemara says, "Loi, no. Again, it's Mishum Misna. It's because of the brother that died, which, as Rashi explains, must be talking about that they were brothers, not only paternally, but even maternally. The Havila Kalas Bita, which is because of the original husband, that it's his daughter's daughter-in-law, again, based on the first brother, not the chalitza. And Moses says, Toshma, come in here, a different rai we'll try to bring from that braisa. Said that she's forbidden uben benoi. She's forbidden in his son's son. My la, mishum chaylitz. Why was she forbidden in the chaylitz's grandson? Not because of the chaylitz himself. Because that makes her a rabbinic erva of his father's father's wife. So you see, you make a rais drabanan by chalitza. And I think Moses says, la, again, mishum misna, it's because of the one that had died. That makes her into the wife of the brother of his father's father. And that's why, but it, again, that's coming through the relationship of her original husband. And that the Gemara asks, but Ba'amema Machshir Be'isha Sachi Avi Aviv. But Amemer says, there is no rabbinic erva of a father's father's brother's wife. So the Gemara concludes, you're right. Amema Mukimla. Amema will establish exactly like you said, Mishum Chaylitz, you're right, that this erva of Ben Benoi will be forbidden because of the chalitz himself. And ukesaver gazur shnius b'chalutza. You're right. According to Amema, you have just proved from this brayis of b'chia that he definitely will hold that we did make exeris of shnius, which is the case of avi aviv, by the chalutza too. But however, according to the one that says that there is an erved rabbanan, there is a shnia of eishes achi avi ha'av, could still say that that would be based on the erva of ben benoi v'chelitz because of the one that had died. And you could still ask your question, what we geizer shnius rabbanan according to those that don't hold like Amemer? So the Gemara has the last conclusive raya. Toshima, we learned over there in the Brayis, it says, ube ben bitoi. She's also forbidden, and the chelitz's daughter's son. So my love mishum chelitz, isn't it because of the chelitz himself, which is the havila eishes avi imei, because she can't marry his daughter's son because that makes her his mother's father's wife. And that's an erva d'rabbanan. And that the Gemara says, Loi, no, that wouldn't be the reason. It's mishum misna, it's because of her original husband. The havila, because based on her marriage she had with him, that would make this man, the havila, eishes achi avi imoy. She'd be forbidden to him rabbinically because she's the wife of his mother's father's brother. And that's why she's forbidden, based on because of we're going the brother route, that of not of the chaylitz, but going one generation onto the side to the brother, which was her original husband, which was a biblical, and therefore we'll make a shnius rabban. And that the Gemara asked, but bagabi shnius de erva le gazru, but we never made such a rabbinic erva according to everybody. Although there was this machlikis with Amema regarding eishes achi avi aviv, but regarding Eishes Achi Avi Imoi, when it's through his mother, no one makes such an Erev D'Rabbanan. Elala Mishum Chaylit. So you have to say that the reason why she's forbidden in his daughter's son is because of the Chaylitz himself, which makes her Eishes Avi'imai. Shmamino, Gaz Vishnias Bachalutza Shmamino. So the Gemara finally concludes, you can infer from that case of the Brayis Rabchia that we were Geyser, even secondary arise, even by the Halacha of Chalutza, which is rabbinic in itself. Now the Gemara concluded with this enigmatic statement of Mutar Adam Luchulu, that a person is permitted in the relatives of the co-wife of the woman that he had done chalitza with, but he's forbidden in the co-wife of the relative of the woman that he did chalitza to. So related to this, the Gemara brings that Amar of Tuvi Bar Kis na Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said the following halacha. He says, Habo al tsaras chalitza, someone that cohabits with the co-wife of the woman that he did chalitza to, meaning his brother died without any children, there were many wives, so one of the women he did chalitza to, now, after he did chalitza to one of the women, one of the co-wives, he then has relations with. So on that, Shmuel said, Havlad Mamzer, the child is an illegitimate child. So the question is, my time, huh? Because Be'isura Kaima, she maintains her original Isra. And that is, the woman that he actually did chalitza to, actually would, according to many shittas, not create a Mamzer. Because the only prohibition is not Karis anymore of Eishes Ach. She was permitted of Eishes Ach because he was able to do Yibn to her. But rather, it's only forbidden because of Lo Yivna, a rabbinic a negative prohibition in the Torah, nothing more than that. But what Shmuel is teaching us is that the co-wife, he never did Yibn or Chalitza to her. So she retains her original Isra of Eishes Ach, which has a punishment of Karis. And therefore, the child of such a union with Karis actually creates a child that's a Mamzer. And therefore, someone that cohabits with the co-wife of the chalutza will actually create a child that's a mamzer. Now, Amar Rav Yosef, he says, Afananam tinina. We also learned this in our Mishnah. In the statement that we just quoted, it says, Mutar adam bekrevas tzaras chalutzas. A person is permitted in the relative of the co-wife of the chalutza. Now, I amrit bishleim tzara avroi, if you say like Shmuel, that the tzara is on the outside, meaning that it maintains the original Issa of Eishes Ach, and that we don't say that the Chalutza, the one that got Chalitza, was just a medium for all of them, but that as if all of them got Chalitza, so then Mishum Hachi, Mutter Ba'achaysa, that would make sense why he's permitted in the sister, meaning the Kareva, the relative, of the Tzara of the Chalutza, because it's not, quote, Achays Chalutza, meaning if you said that the chalutza and the tzara are all the same. He's just happened to be giving it to one of them, but they're all receiving it through the shlichus of the chalutza. But then how would you be permitted in the sister of the tzara if the tzara essentially is the same as the chalutza and you're forbidden in the achleis chalutza, in the relative chalutza? From the fact that we're saying like Shmuel, that she's on the outside, no, she retains her original status, that's all you're permitted in the sister of the chalutza, because regarding her, as we said, there's two ramifications of this, that we say that what the chalutza is receiving, the chalitza, is not a medium of all the other co-wives, and therefore there's two ramifications. One is that we don't say there's just a negative prohibition of lo yivna, rather it maintains its original iser of eishes ach. And moreover, that's why it's going to be permitted to marry the relative of the tzara. Because although a relative of a chalutza is forbidden, she's not a chalutza. And it's not even like a shlich, it's like a messenger was done for her. She's totally different. Eli yamrit tzara kachalutza dami. But if you would say that the tzara is just like the chalutza, meaning the chalutza, the woman that's getting the chalitza, is just a messenger of all the other ones, just one of them has to receive it, and therefore that would give the isra of lo yivna on all the co-wives. Therefore, that would make tzara like the chalutza, then amai mutter. Then why would our Mishnah say that the yavam, the chalitz, is permitted in the achis, the sister of the tzara of the chalutza, if the tzara and the chalutza is the same thing? Therefore, you have to say, obviously like Shmuel, that the tzara is not like the chalutza, and since she's not like the chalutza, so she's not just lo yivna, she actually gets karas. And that's why you're permitted in the karav of the tzara of the chalutza, because there's no isra of a chayis chalutza, because she's not a chalutza, she's just a tzara. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, if that's the case, as you just proved, Rabbi Yisrael from our Mishnah, like Shmuel, so let me tab it to you after Rabbi Yechanan. Let's say this refutes Rabbi Yechanan. Daman that he says in the first paragraph of Yodram Beis, he says, bein hu bein ha'achen, he actually equates them all the same. He says, whether the chalitz, or whether the other brothers, in other words, if someone does chalitza to the Yavama, and then he or one of his brothers goes and has relations with the tsara, the co-wife of the chalutza. And that Rabbi Yochanan says, in chayavin, neither the chalitz or the brothers are not liable. They're not liable for karas on the chalutza. V'lo tsarasa karas, and neither are they liable karas for the tsara. But essentially what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that he says that the isra of lo yivna, which is the new creation post-chalitza, is not just, as he argues with the Shlokesh over there, just between the chalitz and the chalutza, and that the other ones maintain the old isra of Eishes Ach, of karas. He says, no, everyone enters this new arena, because everyone's just a messenger. Only one brother could do it, but he's representing the brothers, and only one of the co-wives could do it, and she's representing everybody else. Now, however, the way Rabbi Yisus just explained our Mishnah, it seems to contradict Rabbi Yochanan, because we see that the tzara is not like the chalutza. Not like Rabbi Yochanan, who said that they're all the same thing and they're all not getting karas, because as Rabbi Yosef just illustrated to prove for Shmuel that if the tzara was like the chalutza, then our Mishnah wouldn't make sense when it's saying that a person is permitted in the relatives of the tzara of the chalutza, if our Mishnah said you're forbidden in the relatives of the chalutza. And the tzara and the chalutza is the same thing according to Rabbi Yochanan. And that the Gemara says, Omlach Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi would tell you no. V'tizbra, do you really entertain to think that the proof that Rabbi Yosef brings from a Mishnah is a proof? What do you mean? You think achos chalutza deraisa? You think that the sister, this halacha that our Mishnah is saying, that the relative, which we just picked sister, the sister of the chalutza is a biblical prohibition? Where then you're asking on me if it's a biblical halacha, and I'm equating the tzara like the chalutza, so therefore you should be forbidden even in the sister of the tzara. What do you mean? V'amir Shlokesh, but Shlokesh says later on the coming Mishnah, he says, Kan Shana Rebbe, this is where Rebbe taught, meaning in that Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to bring, that the following halacha, that achos gerushim in divrei Torah, the sister of the regular divorcee of a married woman, that's biblical prohibition. Achos chalutza in divrei Seferim, the sister of a chalutza, is only rabbinically forbidden, which the Gemara later on will explain this. But one thing we see is that since achos chalutza itself is only rabbinic, so therefore the question doesn't begin. Because maybe, yes, our Mishnah quotes that there is a rabbinic prohibition in the sister, in the relatives of the chalutza. But although halachically I view the tzara equally regarding like lo yivna, that there's no makaris like the chalutza, but it's not a biblical halacha, it's a rabbinic halacha. For example, if let's say it would be confused, a grusha with a chalutza, because they're both being divorced, so it would make sense to say so that the chalutza's relatives, meaning her sister, would be forbidden. But the co-wife, although halachically we view it as the same, there's no reason to say the rabbinic prohibition of a chalutza over there, and therefore the question and the proof that you're bringing is not a raya, and could be that the tzara is the same as the chalutza, and still we wouldn't make the gzer drabanan by the tzara as we make by the chalutza. But now the Gemara concludes this question. Then if that's the case, Maishnohai, what's the difference between the first of these two enigmatic statements that the Mishnah ends with, where it says that the Kerevas Tsaras Chalutza, the relative of the co-wife of the Chalutza, which is the case we're just talking about, that that's permitted, Maishnohai, and what's the difference between the Sefa, the second part of that statement, which says Tsaras Kerevas Chalutza, the co-wife of the relative of the Chalutza, if both of them are unrelated to him? Because we hear they're married to an unrelated person, and yet there we say it's Aser. Why would that be Aser? If he's saying that the co-wife's relatives, even though halachically, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's almost the same thing as the chalutza, yet it's a rabbinic Aser, so we didn't apply it to the tzara. But yet you're going to say that the chalutza's relatives, which itself is a rabbinic Aser, that her co-wife, who they're totally married to some foreign person, is going to be Aser? What would be the understanding of that? So I think my answer is it's for the following svara. There's a reason why they made that. Hach, the kreivas chalutzasai, the relative of the chalutza, let's just pick the sister. The azli bahado lebedina, the relatives of the woman that's getting chalitza dantar, she comes with her to support her, she's coming to bezdin with her. So gazu behu rabbanan, her relatives come with her when she's getting divorced from the yavam. The other rabbanan were geyser, meaning, when Leah goes to get chalitza, her sister, meaning what we call the kreiva of the chalutza, comes with her to Bezdin. Now, not everybody knows who is the Yavama that's getting Chalitza from this Yavam. There's two sisters. So someone could make the mistake and think that he's doing Chalitza with actually Rachel. Now, when later point down, when this Yavam goes and marries the Tzara, the co-wife of Rachel, which is totally not a problem, that's what we call Tzara's Krebus Chalutzasai. It's the co-wife of the relative of his Chalitza. That person is going to say, wait a second, he's marrying the tzara of his chalutza. because he thinks that it was Rachel and his Tzara who were the wives of his brother, because he thinks that this person, this Yavam, did chalitza to Rachel. So that's why actually the co-wife of the relative of the chalitza will be Aser, because people will come to confuse that with a regular Tzara chalitza, which according to everybody is forbidden, whether Karis or whether Alav, the co-wife of a chalitza is definitely forbidden. And therefore, since of the confusion of the relative of the chalutza, even her co-wives have been. However, the Gemara says, "Hi, the tsaras chalutza, the co-wife of the chalutza, to lo azle bahada lebedina. She doesn't come to Bezdin with her. Meaning, when the yavama gets chalitza, all the other wives of the one that just died, the tsaras are not going with her. Therefore, when this yavam marries the sister of the tsara, no one's going to say that he's marrying the sister of the chalutza." Because she never came to Bezdin at the time of the Chalitza. So therefore, Lagaz Rabban, the Rabban were not Gezer in such a case, and therefore, although at first glance it seems like, well, that should definitely not be forbidden, the first case we're saying that actually that is forbidden because of the confusion, and this case, which will not come to any confusion, there actually the Rabbanon did not make any Gezer, because although even Rabbi Yochanan equates the Tzara and the Chalutza, but that was only Rabbinic Isser of the relative of the Chalutza, which we did not apply to the Tzara, and moreover, it's not going to have the same confusion of coming to Bezdin like you have with the sister of the Chalutza, with the relatives of her and her co-wives, because here, the Tzara of the Yavam of the Chalutza is not coming to Bezdin together with the Yavam at the time when she's getting her Chalitza.